Welcome to the Audit 15 Fun podcast. My goal with this podcast is to bring relevant internal audit topics to the table at least every 15 days. Today, I have an exciting debate, and the debate is going to be about why are management action plans never completed? I'm sure people can relate to that, right? To participate in the debate, I have the honor to have as my guests, Mary and Khalil, Managing Partner of Nobility Consultancy based in Kuwait, Aziz Fataliev, IIA President in Azerbaijan, and Rob Barry, also known as That Audit Guy. Welcome, guys, to the podcast. It's an honor to have you all on.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go with Rob first. So Rob, why are management action plans never completed?
Oh, boy. Never is a strong word, but they are probably almost never completed. I think that there are three essential reasons. And I think the first is we allow inadequate action plans in our reports. So that's on us. If we start with a bad baseline, then obviously it's going to end badly. Now, for the sake of time, the second reason I think is that we have our follow-up processes. So what we do is we say we're going to plan a follow-up audit next year, and we go in and we try to look at all of the issues, not realizing that the issues have different due dates, right? Some of them may not be complete when we do the audit, and half the time we don't get around to that follow-up audit. I stopped doing follow-up audits about 15 years ago because they made no sense to me. And I think the third reason is that our communication and escalation needs improvement. So the way that we communicate those issues that need to be followed up on is pretty bad. And then the way that we escalate them, we have a poor staff auditor that goes in trying to follow up, and then the audit manager or the senior auditor is screaming at the staff auditor who can't get all the answers from the person that they're asking questions of. And we don't have a good escalation process to make sure that we get the items that we need from the management team. So those are my three reasons: inadequate action plans to begin with, a subpar follow-up process, and then our escalation is just bad.
Great. I agree with all three of them. And I have a few more myself, but before I get to that, and I want to kind of stir the pot here a little bit with this episode, but Mary, what are your thoughts on why things are not completed?
Well, this is a very big one that's near and dear to my heart, because ultimately we're here for action implementation. So our whole purpose is to move the organization from inaction or ineffective controls to implementation. So when it's not done, and unfortunately, as you have indicated, never, although a strong word, but definitely challenged, I also have narrowed it down to three key reasons. My first reason is sponsorship and leadership commitment. If the tone at the top is weak with respect to implementation, if it's not endorsed, if there's not sponsorship, it's not going to be done. And I think this is the first and primary reason for ineffective implementation. The second reason is ineffective project management. A lot of times action plan due dates are based on, are not reasonable, they're not realistic. They may not consider existing priorities, resource availability, dependencies on other stakeholders, or comprehend the commitment that is required. And in many cases, a lot of the action plans require interim milestones. They require a number of actions to be taken. And a lot of times they'll make a commitment, wait till the week before and say, oh, I can't do this. They didn't think it through thoughtfully, nor consider the dependencies on other individuals in the organization, and probably didn't even calendarize it. So I really think it comes down to project management being number two. The third, similar to what Rob has mentioned, is progress tracking and reporting. What does not get measured, we know does not get done. So if we consider proper tracking and reporting, considering KPIs, incorporating into performance management, incentives, dashboard reporting, and this should be all the way through audit committee to the C-suite. So again, my top three would be sponsorship and leadership commitment, two, effective project management, and three, progress tracking and reporting.
Aziz, your turn.
Okay. So I'll name I think two reasons, mostly. All about motivation. Here, we can divide it in two areas, from the organizational perspective and personal interests. Organizational area. In most cases, from my perspective, people, structures do not execute the action plans because they do not understand the risks. They do not understand why it is important to be done, why is it critical to take those actions, and that's it. We have findings, we have action plans, we have lots of work done, and we agree. I think we agree because it's action plan, management action plan. But anyways, management, middle management, senior management, and maybe, I don't know, maybe committee, do not understand the significance of the issues, unfortunately. The second area for me is personal motivation. Why should I be eager to execute or control the execution of the action plans? What are my benefits? I think it's something similar to the third reason that was pronounced by Marianne. What are my benefits and what are my personal risks? When people do not understand, where there are no incentives to the proper behavior, unfortunately, we need hard controls and we need hard incentives, KPIs, and so on. That's for me, main root causes of this really big problem.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that some people don't understand the risks, because to me, that was something that I see as a reason why people don't complete or why management doesn't complete action plans. And Mary and Rob, so I'll throw that back to you guys, because you guys didn't mention management not understanding the risks. So do you guys see that as a reason why action plans are not completed? Yes or no, and why not, or why yes?
Ladies first.
I would say no, humbly, because we work very hard at making sure they understand the risk. We articulate the observation very well. We vet it many times over. We spend a lot of effort in, you know, articulating the risk, and then giving them the option to accept the risk or to take action. So by the time we get to the action plan, there should not be a debate on the risk. And I think that's the value of having a committed action plan. It was that they committed to taking action because they recognized that there was a gap. I think, quite frankly, what happens is they just get the report, they file it, and they don't look at it anymore. And then other priorities just come their way. So there may be some instances where they may agree per se, and then later have a think and say, oh, I don't really agree to this, possibly. But I would think that that would be minority than majority of the cases. And I'm happy to hear an alternative point of view.
So I'm going to say yes and no. And here's what I mean by that. I'm in the camp with Marianne. I've never really had that issue because you have to put in the work up front to explain risk to the management team. But here's the other thing we have to do too. We have to explain to them what a management action plan actually entails. If you go out on the internet, you'll see that there are a lot of governmental agencies in the US that have their audit reports out there for public consumption. And if you look, the management action plan usually says, we agree with what the auditor said and we will fix it. Well, that's all wrong. A management action plan should really delineate, okay, look, we agree or we don't agree with what has happened. Here's what we're going to do to fix it. Here's when it can be fixed. And here's who is responsible for fixing it. And so I've taken the time in many instances in my career to train the management team on what a good management action plan looks like. And unless we do that, we keep getting the same old garbage. So I've never had that experience, but I can understand and see where other departments have if you've not taken the time to talk management team. So that's why I say yes and no.
That makes total sense. And yes, that is the presumption is that you have mature auditors who are explaining the risk, but that is not always the case, right? So sometimes we're focusing a little bit too much on compliance on the binary yes or no, instead of like, what are the risks of non-compliance, and then explaining that to management. So, okay, I want to go to Aziz now, because Mary and Rob, you guys mentioned, so Mary or Rob mentioned inadequate action plan. We internal audit allows for that, something that maybe takes years, and then we're just creating something just to create something. And then Mary said something about ineffective project management and people not thinking it through, what it takes to complete action plans. And you didn't mention that, Aziz. Why didn't you mention that explicitly? And what are your thoughts on that as a reason for why management is not completing action plans?
Okay. Actually, I agree with those ideas. But from my point of view, the basis, again, for the root causes of them is the understanding, really, significance of the issues. When we do not have good project management, okay, it's implementation case. We can do really much about hard controls, really good. We can implement, design, implement, and so many controls, really good risk management framework, and so on. I'm not talking about the management action plan now. But if then we do not have really good soft controls, if we do not understand the ethics, if we do not understand the significance of the issues, well, those controls won't work. Maybe from the point of view of compliance and internal audits as a watchdog and so on, and maybe it would work, but the tone at the top problem, really big problem. If we do not have that, no really good project management, for instance, would work from my perspective. I think so. And if you would let me to add to my comment, when I say that they do not understand the risks, I'm not talking that we are not explaining them. We do. And formally they accept it. Accept, I mean, not accept the risks. They accept that, agree that, okay, it's really important and it must be corrected. But they do not understand it naturally, that it's really significant. We speak different languages, unfortunately, very often. And yes, sure, it depends on environment. Sometimes the mature organization has its role, but not so mature. There is no unified methodology and so on. Risk management methodology, risk assessment, and prioritization of the projects and so on. And in that case, we really speak different languages.
Okay, I'm going to challenge that as is. And I mentioned that I was going to challenge a few things here in the episode. And others, please feel free to chime in. So you say we're not speaking the same language because they're not understanding the audit language. But maybe our auditor is not understanding the business risks. So.
Yes, sure. No, I'm not talking about that. They do not understand because they are bad and we're good. No, absolutely not. For instance, really good unified strategy, the risk management framework and project prioritization and so on, when we have it, it helps, really helps. Because we agree on risk ranking. We agree, really agree, and they understand that it's not our opinion. It's not a subjective assessment. It's objective. And they really agree that it's significant. And in those cases, we speak same languages. But when we do not have that, so they will just accept, okay, how internal auditors say that it's critical. Okay, let's do it by the end of this year. And never complete it.
Right. So, okay. Rob, Mary, maybe some thoughts around that.
Go for it, Rob.
No, I think that a majority of the onus falls on us as auditors whenever things go awry with management. if we've not appropriately communicated. So when it comes to the understanding of risk, I like to tell my clients, let's get on the same language when it comes to risk. And so we can agree on what the risk level is for specific issues, or we can agree to disagree. And even if we agree to disagree, we're going to put everything in writing. So you have the option to disagree. So I think that breaks down some of the barriers. But I also think that as auditors, we need to understand the talk in the language of business. We use a lot of audit speak, a lot of audit jargon, and we'll never be successful until we learn to speak in a language that they can relate to.
Mary, some thoughts on that?
I think what was said with respect to understanding the risk has been well said. This is something, again, we spend a lot of time vetting and articulating so that everyone understands. You already said that we give them the option to accept or not accept the risk. I think the most important point is ensuring that the action plans are thoughtful, meaningful, are executable, and properly assign accountability with relevant stakeholders that are involved in those processes also have to be named. And dates need to be challenged sometimes. I don't have a problem telling audit clients, I don't think that's really realistic. Let's walk through this. So we challenge dates for them. I'd rather challenge a date and we go through and tell them, please understand this date represents you actually taking the action, making sure it's vetted, approved by the appropriate stakeholders. So please make sure this date reflects everything into actually institutionalizing it. So I think if you don't break down your action plans to reflect that. So for example, a policy and procedure update has to go through proper management of change, where it gets vetted by the right stakeholders, approved by the board. All of that needs to be considered in that date that's committed. So I think having an honest and open dialogue, our clients appreciate that. They appreciate our challenge. We work very closely with them on writing action plans that are meaningful. We do not accept subpar action plans that are not clear or, you know, ambiguous, so that later we end up with the problem. So I think it really comes down to, first and foremost, agree with you, Aziz, make sure they understand the risk. Number two, make sure that the action plans are thoughtful and the dates are reasonable. And then third is make sure it's properly project managed and it gets the sponsorship and reporting.
Beautiful. Okay. So you guys, Rob, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to add to that, but if you have something else, then...
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
So, yeah, to Mary Ann's point, if we don't take the follow-up seriously, our clients aren't going to take it seriously. And I'll tell you guys a story. So in 2007, I started as director of audit at this one organization. And when I got in, you know, the first thing you do is you look and you see what your predecessor had done, right? So we had all of these issues outstanding. And I go to management and I say, there are a ton of audit issues outstanding. What's happening? Here's what they said to me, and it really shocked me. They said, well, he never really took them that seriously. He never really followed up, so we just didn't think anyone was going to follow up. So that's what I meant earlier when I said the onus is on us. What is our policy? How many times do we get, well, first, what is the structure of a good management action plan? Have we defined that and agreed to management with that? Have we provided them with training so that they understand the expectation? Do we have a process by which we say we're going to send out notifications at X time frame? What happens if someone doesn't meet the time frame? How many times do they get to move and change the due date? If they violate whatever time frame we've set up, what happens then? What is the escalation process? So in other words, have we clearly defined a process for follow-up? If we have not, it's our fault. So now I'll tell you what, at this same organization, I looked at one of the issues and it just looked like garbage. I didn't understand what it meant. And as we were having conversations, they didn't even understand what it meant. So I explained to them that these are a reflection of you. You know, this is not just something you put in an audit report and it's buried. but oftentimes we don't partner with them. So first, our processes are broken, which leads to the project management Marianne was talking about. If our process is not defined, we're not going to be able to manage the follow-up project, right? We just can't. But then we allow inadequate action plans because we've not trained them on what it looks like. We've not told them the significance of the fact that these things will be reported to the board, and the board isn't going to want to see, we agree with the auditors. They're going to ask, what are you going to do about it? Because there needs to be some accountability. So at the end of the day, I think it still falls on us to educate, train, and collaborate with the management team at the organization.
Perfect. That's a perfect segue for the last question that I have, which is, how do we solve for that? And you mentioned something there, Rob, that I'm sure a lot of internal auditors can take as an actionable insight here. Create an escalation plan. Create an escalation procedure. What do you do if people are not completing their action plan? So that's actionable insight right there. Any other ideas on how to solve for this?
We've, with our clients, we have instituted or helped our clients institute an online portal to track all of the action plans. So it has proper visibility, reporting, extract reporting. We also present quarterly dashboard reports to the audit committee and to leadership on the progress of actions. We are available to our clients if they have any doubts or questions as far as implementation, and we do review implementation against the original action plan and the recommendation to make sure that the actions implemented were robust. That's been super helpful, but I'll go back to my number one. Without proper sponsorship, tone at the top, you can put the policy, we've done that. Dashboards, we've done that. The online portal, we've done that. If the tone at the top, my number one, is not strong, it will not be done. And we've seen those actions pile up. And then finally, one day, audit committee woke up and said, these are a lot of actions that have piled up. It was that one meeting that just instituted a significant implementation quarter on quarter. And that's really been as a result of the experience realized.
Absolutely great. Turn at the top of the first one. Absolutely. If we do not have really good support, it's not about the support to internal auditing, it's just the turn at the top. And those great people understand that it's really important. And in that case, all of us will understand it, I think. The second one, again, some unified methodology for project prioritization and so on. When we again speak the same languages and we agree and accept that it's unified, we understand it. We all agree that it's critical, it's not, and so on. And the third one is again, KPIs or OKRs or something like that, motivation system. I think the best way for motivation system is carrot and stick. And we need to award for timely and quality execution of the management action plans, really. And so when the management and process owners and so on timely execute and implement those plans, then their, I don't know, bonuses increase. But when they do not, they ignore, overdue with no really good reason for that, then it would beat on their pockets. And I think it helps. I know that it helps.
That's an interesting perspective there on making it tied to some financial reward.
Monetize.
Yeah.
That is pretty interesting. So I'll say, taking what Marianne said, start at the top, right? But then also cultivate it from the bottom so that you can meet in the middle. And let me explain what I mean by that. So everything that Marianne just said is what you should be doing with your audit management system. And I find that in a lot of small departments, if they don't have an audit management system, they make excuses. Now, notice Marianne said they built a portal. So let me just ask, that's not an audit management system, is it, Marianne? You guys actually built that from the ground up, right? So for small audit shops, you can do something similar in Excel. And so in order to solve the problem, tone at the top first, like Marianne said. Second, make sure that the issues, that the management action plans are adequate and accurate by collaborating with your clients. But then the next thing you really have to do is assign ownership. And so I'm going to give away a little secret here. When I do issues and audit reports, I have three different types of owners. I have the functional owner. That is the person that actually performs the task, right? Next, I have the administrative owner. That is the person with budget authority, usually like a director. And then finally, I have your executive owner. That is the person in the executive cabinet that is responsible for the area. Now, what you get is periodic reports because those issues will also be ranked. Every issue will be ranked. Marianne's shaking her head because she probably does something similar. So now when you have a categorization, well, we also categorize them as well. So when you have a categorization and then also a ranking and then that accountability and you send reports periodically, I like to do it monthly personally so you can see your red, yellow, green by area that's under you if you're an executive. You get that better buy-in because now the communication is regular and consistent.
Absolutely. Love it. Love it. Yeah. You all three agree that tone at the top is of utmost importance. And I would definitely agree from personal experience that you do need that executive sponsorship from the beginning, not after the report is issued. So really do appreciate you all being on the podcast. Thank you so much.